Hi, and welcome to the Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on the 4th of July holiday gas prices. Carter Barrett reports on the big impact the COVID-19 pandemic has had on children's mental health. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Deborah Cundiff and Tamara Taylor of the Hammer Financial Group. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. The 2021 4th of July holiday gas prices are the highest we've seen in 7 years, and there are a couple of reasons why. Lakeshore Public Radio's Sharon Jackson spoke with Molly Hart with the AAA Auto Club Group about the current factors that are making prices so high. Here's the conversation.
So can you tell us about the prices that we're going to be encountering for this year's 4th of July and how they compare with years past and why they're so high?
So travel for Independence Day weekend is going to be high. There are going to be 47 million Americans traveling to some destination, and road trip is going to dominate. And nationally, that is going to be 43.6 million, which is 91%, are going to be going by car. And in Indiana, there's going to be 1 million people who are going to be getting in the car to go to their destination.
So that's obviously pretty significant, especially compared to last year, obviously.
Yes. So Indiana travel is back on track with so many people getting in their car to go to their destination. And as mentioned, over 1 million Hoosiers will be taking a car trip, and that's second most on record. It's just 4% behind 2019 numbers.
So are Indiana travelers, are there more of them than travelers from other states? Are more people from Indiana traveling than,
you know,
like Michigan or Illinois?
I don't have a national breakdown of all the different numbers because our footprint is in 14 states. But what I can share with you is, I can say this. As we are emerging from the pandemic, many people throughout the country are excited to get out and take a road trip and especially enjoy this Independence Day holiday. And many are going by car. There are people also getting on planes. And actually, some are taking cruises as well.
So why are the gas prices so high?
Gas prices have gone up this year as global fuel demand recovers from the pandemic faster than supplies. So yes, gas prices are high right now, but what we are saying is the gas prices are not deterring people from taking a Independence Day holiday trip. What they'll most likely do is budget differently and maybe pay less on lodging, as well as maybe not dining out as often.
Do you think that gas prices, will we be getting a reprieve? Will they be going down anytime soon?
Oh, gosh. What I can say is we do anticipate that gas prices will remain at about this level through August.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Molly. I appreciate it.
Sure. Take care.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson. The State Budget Committee has approved spending $12 million for engineering and design work of a planned $400 million rebuild of a deteriorating state prison in Northwest Indiana. The Budget Committee approved the funding Wednesday for the Indiana Department of Correction to begin architectural and engineering design work at the Westville Correctional Facility. The Times reports that DOC officials says nearly all of the 76-year-old prison will be demolished and rebuilt on the 117-acre property. The prison houses about 3,700 medium-security offenders.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
July 1st marked the date when most new laws passed this year by the Indiana General Assembly took effect. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brendan Smith reports that includes several measures reacting to the events of 2020.
2020 brought louder calls for justice reform, and Indiana lawmakers reacted unanimously, approving landmark police reform legislation. Taking effect July 1st, it requires all police to undergo de-escalation training and makes it easier for the state to decertify officers who commit misconduct. But the protests over police brutality also prompted Republicans to pass a law that requires state police and local governments to prioritize the protection of monuments and statues without any explanation for what prioritize means. And lawmakers took several steps to address their anger over some of Governor Eric Holcomb's COVID-19 executive orders. One of them, which takes effect July 1st, classifies religious services as essential, shielding them from future executive orders. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Youth work permits are no more in Indiana. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports that's the result of a new law that took effect July 1st, requiring employers, not workers, to register with the state.
Before now, employers had to file an intent to employ form, and local schools had to issue an approval before anyone under 18 could legally work. Lawmakers in the General Assembly said that was cumbersome and created paperwork for school administrators, frequently in summer months. They created a bill, now law, which mandated the State Department of Labor create a public online database of youth employers instead. Only employers with five or more minors are required to register on it. It's been open since June, but starting in July, employers could face fines of up to $400 per employee if they fail to follow the new rules. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A federal judge Wednesday blocked a major part of Indiana's latest anti-abortion law from taking effect. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brenda Smith reports the halted provisions deals with a controversial abortion reversal protocol.
U.S. District Court Judge Sarah Evans Barker is halting a new process for teachers to get union dues automatically deducted from their paychecks. It requires them to sign a form saying they're aware of their right to not join a union. Unions claim that amounts to coerced speech, a First Amendment violation. But the state says union members have other ways to pay dues if they want. The judge's decision protects teachers' existing union contracts and right to free speech. Shannon Adams is president of the Martinsville Classroom Teachers Association. She says the decision is great, but it's discouraging to think lawmakers created the measure to begin with.
They either don't respect us or they're scared of us, and I'm not sure which it is.
Barker's preliminary injunction will last until the case is resolved in court or the judge decides to lift it. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The federal government dismissed an investigation into the Indiana Department of Education. From Indiana Public Broadcasting, Lee Gaines reports that the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights was concerned that the state was doing a poor job of addressing complaints that special education students were forced into one-size-fits-all learning programs during the pandemic.
The U.S. Department of Education dismissed its investigation, saying they have no information to prove that the state violated federal disability laws. Ron Hager with the National Disability Rights Network says this is the first time he's aware that the federal government has investigated a state education agency. And he's disappointed by the dismissal.
Because we do see, even pre-COVID, and I'm sure we'll see it post-COVID, that students with disabilities are not getting the services that they need, and the state is not doing enough to monitor and enforce the federal laws.
A spokesperson for the Indiana Department of Education declined to comment on the federal government's dismissal of its investigation. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Gaines.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
A federal judge is temporarily blocking a new Indiana law aimed at teachers' unions. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Justin Hicks reports it was set to take effect Thursday and would require teachers to sign language that unions believe is unconstitutional and anti-union.
U.S. District Court Judge Sarah Evans Barker is halting a new process for teachers to get union dues automatically deducted from their paychecks. It requires them to sign a form saying they're aware of their right to not join a union. Unions claim that amounts to coerced speech, a First Amendment violation, but the state says union members have other ways to pay dues if they want. The judge's decision protects teachers' existing union contracts and right to free speech. Shannon Adams is president of the Martinsville Classroom Teachers Association. She says the decision is great, but it's discouraging to think lawmakers created the measure to begin with.
They either don't respect us or they're scared of us, and I'm not sure which it is.
Barker's preliminary injunction will last until the case is resolved in court or the judge decides to lift it. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Justin Hicks.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Side Effects Public Media produced a series on children's mental health. This feature will take a look deeper into the barriers, including a shortage of psychiatrists and other providers, as well as how the pandemic is making things worse. Carter Barrett reports.
That some of my, so when I was an undergrad in a lab, the grad students crocheted that for me. Our mentor.
Gabriela Rodriguez is a psychologist at an Indianapolis Children's Hospital. She shows me around her office and points out keepsakes, like a crocheted sign that says drastically different and thank you notes.
So some of these are from patients, some of them are from students and things like that. So those are all really nice.
And just in your experience, is there enough mental health professionals for children to meet demand?
No, absolutely not. We have long wait lists. Everyone has a long wait list right now.
Rodriguez says during the pandemic, more children are seeking mental health services. But with wait lists, help is delayed at a crucial moment.
It's really challenging because we know that the sooner that we can get help, the better, right? And so any time that's spent waiting is, I think, wasted time, unfortunately.
Finding help was a problem even before COVID hit. In 2018, a federal agency said that 1 in 10 children in America has a serious mental illness, and only half of them will get treatment. And COVID has put even more stress on children, like dealing with virtual school, mask mandates, and the fear of losing loved ones. Now, families facing both acute and long-standing problems struggle to find treatment. And why is it so hard to find mental health providers? Let's consider psychiatrists, who often treat more serious cases because they can prescribe medication.
So the number of residents 5 years ago was 6 for the state, and now we are at 24. Certainly some positive growth in that regard.
This is Dr. Michael DeMott. He runs IU Health's psychiatry residency program. He's describing a 4-fold increase, but it won't have a big impact anytime soon. It takes years to train doctors. An adolescent and child psychiatrist required 2 extra years of school. Psychiatrists also tend to be older than other types of doctors, and they're leaving the field at a faster rate than we can train them. One study projects that in 2024, 2,600 psychiatrists will retire, and there will only be 1,800 new ones to replace them. DeMott says young doctors can be quickly overwhelmed by the demand.
For a resident, doing inpatient work, depending on where they're at in training, they may be limited to 8 or 10 patients. Whereas upon graduation, they're, folks practicing caring for twice that many on a daily basis.
The American Academy for Adolescent and Child Psychiatry says there should be 47 child psychiatrists for every 100,000 children. Indiana has just 6 for every 100,000 children. There's another factor that can put mental health care out of reach for some families: psychiatrists foregoing insurance. That forces patients to pay out of pocket, which can be really expensive. And the reasons for going this route are complicated, but it's often a doctor's response to low reimbursement rates from insurers.
Which then puts pressure on practices to see more patients more quickly. And in psychiatry, that's really challenging because so much of our work is built around relationships.
That's IU Health psychiatrist Diane Rice. By not taking insurance, providers can charge more and avoid squeezing patients into 15-minute appointments. Other mental health providers are also feeling the pandemic strain. Therapist Rebecca Peters runs a child and adolescent practice in Lafayette, Indiana. She's seen more problems because of the pandemic.
You know, I would say acute stress, even PTSD kind of symptomology.
And her wait list is long too.
Well, I will tell you, I hate returning phone calls because I start with, I do not have any new client appointments until August.
Some hope innovations like telemedicine will make it easier for people to get treated. Meanwhile, the federal government is giving more money to mental health groups across the country as part of the latest COVID relief bill. But some experts warn that stressors of the pandemic will be felt for years, and the full impact is unknown. For SetFX Public Media, I'm Carter Barrett.
This series was produced by Bridge Michigan and SetFX Public Media in collaboration with the Institute for Nonprofit News. The project was made possible by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation with additional support from Ian's Amplified News Project and the Solutions Journalism Network.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Deborah Cundiff and Tamara Taylor of the Hammer Financial Group about their group called Women's Worth.
Well, it is no secret that women tend to earn less over their lifetime compared to men, and sometimes having to take time off from work to take care of children, aging parents, and even their spouses' parents. Women again have come in to the rescue to help their families during the pandemic, and that's according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Over 2 million moms have been forced or opted not to work during the pandemic to be able to help youngsters with their schooling. And today we are joined by Deborah Cundiff, who is a senior financial advisor, and Tamara Taylor, who is an insurance specialist, and they both run a division at Hammer Financial Group here in Northwest Indiana called Women's Worth. To be able to talk about why women of all ages ought to pay a particular attention to their finances compared to their spouses. And ladies, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thanks so much for having us, Chris.
Well, Deb, if you will, first, why does this seem to be a problem for women as far as finances are concerned?
You know, unfortunately, even brief absences from our employment can have a negative impact on our ability to retire comfortably, Chris. According to the Center of American Progress, women who lose wage growth, or lose retirement savings while taking time away from work can actually lose up to 4 times their salaries.
Wow.
Think about a 30-year-old female who earns $50,000 a year. Assume she takes 3 years off from work. She'll actually experience over $417,000 in total lost income.
Yeah, nobody, I think, decides to look at the cumulative effect of all this, and that's right. There are tens of thousands of dollars of lost income when the one person who is part of the breadwinning part of the family has to step aside for whatever reason it is, to be sure. And this is a big financial loss for women, is it not?
It sure is.
Yeah, that's right. You know, even with the pandemic or not with the pandemic, taking time off of work should be a significant consideration for women, because statistically, women outlive men by more than 5 years. And Chris, keep in mind, 80% of women die single and 80% of men die married. So when making financial decisions, many couples really don't take that into consideration, that, you know, women are going to tend to live longer than their male counterparts. And in many cases, these women have taken additional time off to care for their children or for their aging parents.
Now, I know that when Greg Hammer and I get together for a conversation about financial matters, spend a lot of time, not all the time, but a lot of the time talking about Social Security. What should women know about claiming Social Security? It's probably a point that many women do not think about.
So true. Women really need to understand the importance of optimizing their Social Security, because it is going to represent a significant portion of their income in retirement. There are actually over 500 different ways to claim your Social Security benefit, and that amount is based on our 35 highest earning years. So you can imagine that zeros can bring our benefit calculation down.
Yeah.
You know, if we've taken time off to care for our young children or our aging parents. Another consideration, Chris, is deferring. Do we want to wait even beyond our full retirement age to take our Social Security. For every year that we wait, our benefit actually grows by 8%. So pushing back that date for taking our benefit can add up to $10,000 a year, which can be life-changing, right, for seniors who are living on a fixed income. Women who often outlive men, as Tammy mentioned, face more medical expenses. So we really do need to think long and hard about the benefits of deferring.
Yeah, I know that's a major concern, even with men worrying about Social Security, the fact that if you do retire and you do have a relatively comfortable income that you can fall back on, you still have all of those expenses with medicine and with hospital treatments and everything else that can happen, too, to be sure. Well, and added to that, and talking about health care and medical costs, many people think that it's all the same as long-term care, but it really isn't, is it?
No, it really isn't, Chris. A single woman retiring today, she can expect to need about $150,000 for health care costs over her lifetime. And on top of that, 75% of residents in nursing homes are women, with the average stay in the nursing home being somewhere between 2.5 to 5 years. And the average cost of those stays are about $100,000 a year right now in today's dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So although many people are hesitant to purchase long-term care insurance because, you know, they don't know if they're going to use it or not, the statistics really show that 70% of people over the age of 65 are going to require some form of long-term care services or some type of support over their lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand some life insurance companies are also making it easier for women, too, by offering some better opportunities to be able to prolong the benefits if a husband passes away.
Yeah, there are life insurance companies that are out there now that have long-term care policies that have a life insurance component associated with them. So these types of policies are called asset-based long-term care, and they can be used for either long-term care services, but if they're not used for long-term care during their lifetime, they will provide a death benefit to their loved ones, you know, the people that they leave behind. So then it's not a use-it-or-lose-it situation.
We're talking with Deborah Cundiff, who's a senior financial advisor, and Tamara Taylor, who's an insurance specialist. They both are working with Hammer Financial Group, and they run a division called Women's Worth about issues that will affect women financially, to be sure. Well, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about taxes. It always comes up in other conversations. What about taxes as far as women are concerned?
Well, Chris, I always say it's not what we make, right? It's what we keep.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to look at our retirements and think, hey, you know, we're fine. But what we're not factoring in, Chris, is that we're actually in partnership with the government on our IRAs, our 401ks, our 403bs. So it's really important to develop tax mitigation strategies so that we can tap into that nest egg that we've worked so hard to accumulate in the most tax-efficient way. Now, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act has offered us historically low tax rates. We do have a rare window of opportunity here to do Roth conversions. In other words, rip off the Band-Aid now, knowing that we're in these, you know, more favorable tax brackets, so that we're not forced to take these dollars out in the way of RMDs in higher tax brackets. And, of course, as Tammy mentioned, right, 80% of women die single. So we all know that the single tax bracket is not kind.
And also, too, it turns out that if it's a particularly difficult time of life, I guess, with being in the single tax bracket in that way, you're spending an awful lot of time being in that because you're going to survive the spouse a lot longer than many people think, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Right. So, you know, income planning in retirement is just that, right? It's, you know, what is our monthly net need in retirement and where is that coming from? So women should seriously consider increasing their promise-based income by purchasing income for their retirement.
Mm-hmm.
An annuity can provide lifetime income, which for women who do often face long longevity risks can make a ton of sense. Ultimately, you win when you live long with an annuity.
Now, Tamara, let me ask you in closing today, what seem to be the differences between working with men and women in terms of their finances?
Well, Chris, what Deb and I have really noticed with the women we have worked with is when their spouse does pass, they tend to feel lost, as they typically really have not been as engaged in their finances as they should have been. In many cases, they really do feel they haven't been listened to by their husband's advisors. So we really recommend to the women that we work with to try to get involved early on in their finances so this doesn't happen. A crisis really is the last way a woman wants to, you know, to have to learn how to manage her finances. But, in some cases, that's just what happens, and she does learn to do it on her own, and sometimes that can be very empowering for women.
Well, it just sounds like that it's wise for men and women to have good financial help from some advisors, and at least we hope we've gotten some off to some people thinking about that today. Deborah Cundiff is a senior financial advisor, and Tamara Taylor is an insurance specialist. They both run a division at the Hammer Financial Group here in Northwest Indiana called Woman's Worth. And ladies, thank you very much for the advice and the information, and we hope to have a chance to be back together again soon. Thank you.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lake Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.